Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Okay, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Very happy to have Beatrice Montpremier, who comes out of the University of Miami, but is now a part of the LA Sparks. Beatrice, thank you for taking some time and joining the Sliwa Show. How are you?
I'm doing well, and you? Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. All right, well, first of all, congratulations on being drafted, number one.
Thank you.
And number two, I just want to get your thoughts. What's this kind of mean like for you to be a part of the LA Sparks and be part of Los Angeles basketball? What's this all mean to you?
I'm excited to be a part of the LA Sparks family. I'm honored to be here. It's a great opportunity that I was provided for the hard work that I, you know, put in college, and, you know, now that I'm here and they taking a chance on me to, you know, show what I'm made of.
Tell us a little bit about your game, because I think if you can help, I know you're typically, so you're 6'4", you play
forward. In the post. Yeah, it's like a face up post player. I think my game is like fast paced, running in transition, rebounding, and, you know, whatever my team need me to do, I feel like I could be that person.
So your junior and your senior year, if you take the averages there, you're averaging just under 17 points a game and over 10 rebounds. If you take your junior and your senior year at University of Miami, I want to kind of just go back to draft night. What was that like for you when you're standing there? And I know this is a virtual draft, so it's different from how it's done in the past. But what was that moment like for you? Were you with your family? How did you spend that evening?
I was with my family and friends, and we were just sitting there watching it live. And then, you know, I'm nervous. I'm just sitting there nervous, like. waiting for my name to be called. And, you know, when it finally happened, like, I was in shock, but then again, I didn't see it until, like, my brother was like, oh, I think you just got drafted. And it was just like a small pause, and, you know, everybody just like started staring at the TV. And then my brother's like, yeah, you just got drafted. And then, like, I just felt a sense of relief that just came over me. And I was excited to be a part of the LA Sparks, and, you know, I never been to Cali, so this is an opportunity for me to go to Cali too and be a part of that organization and part of that team.
So you go from Miami to California. That's not bad. From Miami to LA.
Yeah.
I think you're doing good location wise, very well location wise. But it is Beatrice. It's we have Beatrice Montpremier. She is the newest LA Spark drafted 20th overall forward for the Sparks. It is interesting because when you try and take us through that draft process, I mean, that's got to be crazy. You got 19 picks that were before you, and, you know, I had read a couple different things that many thought you would go earlier in the draft, and you're kind of the steal of the draft, I guess you could say. Just kind of thinking, like, what goes through your mind? What goes through some of these athletes? We just had the NFL draft this past weekend. It's kind of crazy to think of just all the different emotions going through your mind as that draft is unfolding.
And really, it's just mainly nerves. Like your nerve is just kicking in. You're just very, very nervous because, honestly, you really don't know what's going to happen. Like, you heard, like, certain things. Like, I heard certain things from my agent. Like, this could be a possibility. This could be a possibility. But at the end of the day, you really don't know. So you're just sitting there nervous and just waiting and waiting until your name is called. And then, you know, the excitement come in, you know, that you're drafted.
So I saw this, the WNBA draft, most watched draft for the WNBA in 16 years. Ratings on ESPN were up 123%. I'll ask you, you know, before I kind of get into the Sparks and playing with Candace Park and playing with some of these other great players on the Sparks, what's your hope for the WNBA? Where would you love to see the WNBA in 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Like, kind of just looking big picture for the league, what is your hope for the league?
you know, we're like prime time, you know, when we're playing, you know, more games on ESPN and ESPN2, you mm-hmm. know, just things like that. You know, we're getting, I hope for us to, you know, as things progress, you know, move up and up, and the WNBA is coming more prime time. I hope to see that happen more, like, in the years to come. And I honestly think it will happen. So it just, I just think in due time it will happen.
I remember this, Beatrice, in December. So I do the Lakers pregame and the postgame show. So I remember being at the Lakers game in December. Lakers were playing the Dallas Mavericks, and I talked about this on that day where Kobe, you know, the late great Kobe Bryant walked in with his daughter, Gigi, and they sat courtside. And I talked about how powerful I thought it was that Kobe was wearing a WNBA sweater, right? That's, here's one of the greatest to ever play, and he was representing the WNBA. He's wearing that sweater. That always kind of just stood out to me, and it stands out even more to me now after the, you know, obviously the tragic helicopter accident. Do players in the WNBA or like someone like yourself, do you notice things like that? How much do you guys notice when there's NBA players trying to support the WNBA? How much does that stand out for you guys?
Yes, of course we noticed that. Like, you know, as a basketball player, he's supporting another basketball player, regardless if it's men or women. So, like, you know, him supporting the WNBA, you know, is always good for, you know, for later on.
For
and
the league,
I think
yep.
that can be good.
I said for the league, right? Like it's great for the league. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know, and then like him being such a great player, a great mentor, and someone that, you know, pretty much everyone looks up to as a basketball player and a person. Him supporting the WNBA, and you know, us seeing that, like, you know, other people see that too, and then they start to support, and then it's more support going towards the women's game in our league.
Beatrice, for those who, you know, are listening to this program, they're big basketball fans, they're big NBA fans, but let's say they're not spending time tuning into the WNBA, or they're not spending time watching as much as women's college basketball as they are men's college basketball. What are they missing out on? Like, tell me what makes the league, because I know there's an incredible amount of talent in both the WNBA, and you just obviously coming out off of playing at University of Miami. What are those who have not got a chance to watch the product on a consistent basis? What are they missing out on?
They miss out on great games. You know, women showing what they are working on, and you know, their skill levels. Yeah, pretty much.
I'm sure there's that, you know, just like what we see in an NBA game, just that that competitiveness. You're going to see it in the WNBA too. I got a good friend of mine who's going to be coming on the show on Friday, Ben Lyons, and he does a lot of, you know, work with me on radio. He always talks about how he loves going to Sparks games, and he's like, here you are, you know, you could get a great seat, and you know, from a ticket perspective, it's very affordable. And, you know, he kind of painted that vision, and we'll see when sports comes back and when that opportunity comes again. But I think that's important to highlight. A couple more questions here. One of the questions I wanted to ask, so how are you training now? Like, how are you staying in shape, working on your game during this quarantine? What are kind of some of the, I'm sure what you're doing, a lot of the other athletes are doing, but how are you keeping in shape and trying as best as you can to keep on your game as well?
Lately, I've just been working out with like my high school coach. He's able to open up the gym and the weight room for me, so that's been very beneficial. Also, like we as a team, we had like a virtual meeting and like a virtual camp. This Monday, and you know, they will upload like videos of workouts that we could do, like And during the time, like, I've just been doing that, and I've just been working out and just trying to keep in shape, running a lot, and, you know, just doing that.
Are you excited to be coached by Derek Fisher?
Yes, I am. Excited to play for 5-time NBA champion Derek Fisher. It's an honor. You know, he's played a game, so he understands it. So, you know, any knowledge that I could take from him, I'll be gladly to take.
Well, Beatrice, I appreciate you making some time joining the show. It's great to kind of get a little bit of your background, get your thoughts on what to expect for the upcoming season for the WNBA. So thanks for doing this, and I wish you nothing but the best this season.
Thank you.
All right, there it is. There it is. Beatrice doing a great job. You could tell, by the way, I love when, you know, you have a guest on, and she kind of sounds nervous in the beginning, and then she gets her rhythm, and she just sounds very comfortable towards the end there. So interesting to see as we talk about all the other sports. Obviously, WNBA is a sport that's going to be waiting to see what happens with its season. Okay, so the conversation, we've heard it, and it's kind of gone back and forth, and it's this Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, what happened to that handshake? Of course, it was blown way out of proportion, but I thought there were some interesting points made by Isaiah Thomas this morning with the morning show. So we'll get a little bit into that. We'll do that coming up next. Don't forget, 8 o'clock, we'll have halftime. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. I miss a lot of these calls, L.A. Got to be real with you guys. 877-710-ESPN. You know, when we're in the middle of the Lakers season, and I know a lot of this just has to do with reactions to games and so forth, but if you're driving around there, you're listening on the app, you're always, always welcome to call in 877-710-ESPN. So this morning, Isaiah Thomas was on the morning show. Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas. And I mentioned this, I think, yesterday. I think this thing has been so blown out of proportion. The whole thing has been so blown out of proportion about Michael and Isaiah, about the Pistons and the Bulls. I was actually curious to see. I couldn't remember if after the Lakers lost to the Pistons, in my head, I was like, did the Laker players shake hands with the Pistons after they lost to the finals? They did. I saw Kobe. They just aired this 4 o'clock, and it probably ended right in the middle of crosstalk. I saw Kobe giving love to some of the Pistons players. But it was blown out of proportion. And I hated that that's what came out of the Last Dance. That was kind of the theme, other than the Dennis Rodman binge in Vegas. That was the thing that everybody remembered. But what I emphasized was, please do not tell me that what happened in that finals against the Eastern Conference Finals against the Detroit Pistons, please don't tell me that that's the reason why Isaiah Thomas was left on off of the Dream Team. Because from a player perspective, it's a no-brainer Isaiah Thomas would have been on the Dream Team. How can I make that argument? Well, I'll make it because that Pistons team had gone through the Celtics, had gone through the Lakers, had gone through the Bulls, had gone through Bird, Magic, and Jordan to win their two NBA championships and make it, have that run there, that bad boy Pistons. And Isaiah Thomas was the best player on that team. So, of course, he should have been on the Dream Team, but he wasn't. And that was kind of a lot of the conversation was, well, was it because of him and the Pistons not shaking hands with the Chicago Bulls, which they should have done, but they obviously didn't? Was it because of that Isaiah Thomas doesn't make the Dream Team? So I want to play some of this sound. Isaiah Thomas was on the morning show, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. Here's Isaiah Thomas explaining that not on the Dream Team because of the handshake, it would obviously be extremely disappointing.
Tried to do everything correctly, and I thought I should have made that Dream Team. However, I wasn't a part of it. That hurt me. And looking back, if I'm not a part of the Dream Team because, you know, a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the Dream Team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
So that's kind of the theme that Isaiah's played in this whole thing. And it has got run. It's probably got much more run than it should get, but because the Lakers didn't get a chance at this point right now of the year to sweep the Memphis Grizzlies and be preparing for the second round against the Houston Rockets, this is part of the conversation that everybody's having. It's on this, you know, this Last Dance stuff. But I've said it and I'll say it again. If it's something like that that keeps Isaiah off the Dream Team, that's very unfortunate. And it sounds like Isaiah believes that that's the case. He was also asked by the Morning Crew if MJ and Pippen were the reason why he wasn't on the Dream Team.
You know, I've never pointed a finger at anybody, and I've heard rumors, and I've heard all kind of innuendos. But you know, you and I kind of from like the same, you know, neighborhoods, and I take a man at his word. And anytime I've been around any of them, you know, especially Michael, he and I have had dinner before. You know, he's always been good to my family whenever we've been out and interacted. I've never had a moment of him where there was discomfort, you know, outside of the playing field. So I can't blame anybody. I'm not trying to blame anybody. I just know what I've heard and what everybody else has heard. And if they felt that way, you know, then say it.
All right, so what this sparked was Rod Thorne, who's a longtime NBA executive who helped assemble that Dream Team roster for 1992. He said he denied ever speaking with Jordan about keeping Thomas off the team. There was never anything in my conversation with Jordan that had to do with Isaiah Thomas, period. He was on Golic and Wingo a little bit earlier today. He said, I'll do it. Isaiah never came up during that conversation. And he never backtracked and said he didn't want to do it from that time on to those of us in the NBA office. So that's kind of the I want to say kind of putting a rest to this conversation, because it's a conversation that has come up. It will probably kind of go away as we get closer to episodes 5 and 6. So I'm ready for this to kind of take a back page, I guess you could say. Listen, I'm a fan of – I can't tell you how much I love that era of basketball, even though my true era was, you know, Kobe and Shaq. That's when I was watching basketball the most, maybe in the, you know, the mid-90s to late 90s. That's when I'm not missing any games, but still watching the Jordan days and watching the, you know, obviously Larry Bird, Magic, the Pistons days. That era was a special, special era. The talent that used to play back in those days was amazing. And when I heard Jordan on Sunday talking about the Last Dance and spending time, Jordan didn't look happy about the predicament of the situation, right? Like, Jordan 100% was still upset or bitter that the Pistons didn't give them the proper respect the way Jordan gave the Pistons the proper respect when they eliminated them 2 years in a row in the Eastern Conference Finals, or just in the playoffs. I don't know if both of those rounds were in the Eastern Conference Finals. The right thing to do was to have Isaiah Thomas go shake hands. They didn't do it. But the Dream Team part, that cannot be part of the effect when all this is said and done. Quick little tease here. I know I mentioned it earlier. We've mentioned it a couple times. Don't miss episodes 5 and 6, Last Dance, this Sunday, 6 p.m. on ESPN and streaming live on the ESPN app. If you missed episodes 1 and 4, you can stream them now with ESPN On Demand and on the ESPN app. The one thing that I think we'll get coming up from this this new episode, the conversation is that Kobe will be a part of it. And when I spent some time a little bit earlier in the show, I had the second round pick, 20th overall pick, with Beatrice Montpremier. And I talked a little bit about Kobe, and I talked about, you know, the impact that I felt like he was having on the WNBA, specifically, you know, the way he wanted to represent his daughter. But that sweater, putting on that sweater, how powerful that was against the Dallas Mavericks game, where it's a WNBA sweater. And, you know, obviously everybody talks about that because he's with his daughter. It was a very, very powerful moment there. But the word is that episodes 5 and 6 that are coming up for The Last Dance, we'll have some footage with the late, great Kobe Bryant. Okay, we got halftime coming up next. Myself, Jesse, and Curtis, appreciate you guys tuning in. If you want to hit me on Twitter, at Alan Sliwa, and if you miss any part of the show, you can always download the first hour and a half that we've done on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Jesse and Curtis coming up next. Halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Fellas, how we doing?
We doing good. I'm trying to talk to the beat of the song now.
Mm-hmm. With a delay. It's pretty
good. I know.
With a delay.
Did it sound good, though? Tell me honestly.
I would say
the right, song's normal. The song's
normal. I got the first one here, okay? I got the first one here. So if you guys saw this, Tom Brady, just kind of think of all the different athletes that are out there. You got a lot of athletes. You got a lot of actors and actresses. They're doing everything they can to try and raise money. There's this all-in challenge that's going on right now. So Tom Brady is doing an auction here. It's a package that includes dinner or a workout with Tom Brady, his first home game with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as well as tickets to the game, his jersey, and his cleats netted $800,000 when it closed on Tuesday night in that all-in challenge. This is a great program that's going on, and there's a lot of money being raised for all this. So I'll give you another example. Let's see, another package that closed, $525,000 for 18 holes of golf and dinner for 10 with Super Bowl winning quarterback Peyton Manning, who will fly to the winner's city for the event. Other items that recently sold: Russell Wilson and his wife Sierra, Meek Mill's Rolls Royce for $320,000. And then one more that I want to mention because it's got the local tie: a game of horse and courtside seats with Magic Johnson at a Lakers game sold for $220,000. Fellas, think of an athlete that you want to spend time with, that, you know, part of these packages. I know none of us are dropping $100,000 to go do it, but what is the athlete that you would most want to spend or go to a game or do something like this? It could be a current player or an old player. Which athlete jumps out to you? Jess, I'll have you go first.
So it's funny because I'm just kind of reverting back to what we did yesterday with the Zoom party. So I'm like, all right, who would I have the most fun with? And I think the person I would choose would be George Kittle from the 49ers, just because I know what we would do is we would go to a wrestling show and we would just have a great time watching wrestling. So I think that's what I would do. I would choose George Kittle. We'd go buy a bunch of Steve Austin's IPA beer. We'd find it somewhere, and then we'd just go watch wrestling.
Whether you know what's interesting? You know what's interesting, Jess? I think I thought more like legend, right? Like legend that you want to spend time with. So I know, you know, yesterday we're talking about the Zoom call, you're quarantining or you're shooting the you know what with another player. I feel like with something like this, just the names they're putting out there: Tom Brady, Peyton Manning,
Magic Johnson.
Like there's this like connection with these greats, these Hall of Fame greats. Like for me, for example, Magic was my favorite player growing up, and I don't even know what it was about Magic. I just loved his leadership. I thought he was amazing. And then what Magic's accomplished off the court, just from a business perspective, and I've told you guys stories where when I was doing Lakers talk and I introduced myself when we became president of basketball operations, 6 months later, he tells me that, hey, the show sounds good. I'm like, how the hell would you remember? Like there's those things I respect from Magic Johnson. For me, I think it would be Magic. If I got to spend one evening with one player and you could talk shop about everything, I think for me it's Magic. Curtis, what's yours?
Yeah, I was kind of going along with Jesse's thing too. I was like, oh, I'd hang out with Klay Thompson. But if I wanted to go more broad, I kind of, for some reason, my first thought was hanging out with like Pau Gasol. And just listening to him rant about whatever, because I know he's got
be a great thing.
So many things that he's good at and that he's passionate about and all that. And I think it'd be pretty interesting.
Every time Pau's name comes up, for me, right? Like, I love when we mention Pau because I never feel like he gets the, you know, the proper love. Not that 100%. Nobody loves Pau Gasol, but he just never brought up the way he should be brought up. That's a good one, actually. I like the Pau.
And we can both speak Spanish, so it'd be entertaining.
But that, that Spaniard Spanish is different from, like, you
the
know.
Spaniard Spanish? The Spaniard?
Yeah. So sometimes I hear, like, you know, whether it's movies or just random videos, I hear like that Spanger Spanish, and I'm just like, wait, what?
Do you understand? You understand it easily, or there are times where you're
I'm lost.
I don't feel. Oh, really? Wow.
I have trouble understanding Spanish sometimes. If you're talking like that, real quick lingo, I'm like, forget it, yo. I'm like, hold on, talk at one syllable at a time.
So you know what's kind of interesting is I talk Chaldean is the language, right? It's like a form of Aramaic, and that's what my parents – that's what they talked to me growing up. But it is interesting to hear them talk to me. I got no problem. But when I talk back to them, a lot of the time it's English. You know what I mean? Like I'm rarely talking back to them in Chaldean. But anything they say to me, I understand fully. Are you guys like that with Spanish or not at all?
No, I still talk to my mom in Spanish, but yeah. I'll talk to her in like Spanglish, just because, like, you know, at the time where I was like in high school, she was trying, like, she was learning to become a citizen, so she wanted to learn English, so she would tell me to talk to her in English, so she could learn and be able to, you know, pick up conversation and, like, you know, the English language nuances, because she's a pattern maker, she makes dresses and stuff, patterns for dresses and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And her boss is Korean, and her boss only talks English. So, you know, my mom's been working there for over a decade, and, you know, she learned how to communicate English by talking to me, watching TV, and, you know, just learning. And she's a citizen now, she learned all that. So it's, I feel like that's kind of like the norm now, because I can talk to her fully in English, and she will 100% understand everything I say, and she'll talk to me back in Spanish, and for the most part, understand it. But I feel like that's normal now. I feel like that's, like, you know, a whole nother side of, you know, learning a language is being able to understand it. You may not be able to speak it, but, you know, if you understand it, that's enough to at least get by within certain conversations.
So Curtis, to answer your question, Pau Gasol, solid pick for Pau Gasol. He doesn't get the amount of love that he should get. And I know everybody loves him, but we just don't talk about him enough. Okay, Jess, why don't you go, bud?
All right. So about a week ago, Lamar Jackson was announced that he was going to be the new cover boy of Madden NFL 21. And he said it was always a dream of his since he was a child, since he first started playing Madden. And he has every Madden, you know, to date. So it's been a dream come true for his. And, of course, one of the big things associated with Madden is the Madden curse. But he kind of cut through that curse because he said Patrick Mahomes is on the front cover of Madden 20 and he won Super Bowl MVP. I want that curse. I hope that's the curse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and there's been some – the past couple of years the curse hasn't been as – hurtful as previous years, but it's still up in the, you know, zeitgeist of Madden and whatnot. So I came up with the game, but before we play the game, I want to ask both of you guys if you truly really believe in, like, curses and superstitions and stuff like that.
Curtis, that's all you, buddy.
Well, I was just gonna say, we were talking about this previously, but since I am half brown, there's a lot of ridiculous things that they believe that are supposedly, you know, supposed to be true. They sound ridiculous, and so
give me a couple that are what are some of the superstitions.
So I'll give you
a
really basic one,
okay,
that kind of actually makes sense. That's the problem, is a lot of these things just kind of work out to, yeah, it works, but it's not really why it just happened to work out that way. When I was little, my mom would shave my head, like, pre 1 year old, over and over, because she was told if you shave a baby's head over and over, you know, that their hair will grow thicker later in life. And she did that with myself, my first little sister, and then didn't do it with my second little sister. And my second little sister is the only one with really thin hair in our family. So
You know, can I tell you something? I've heard that before. I've heard that before. I mean, some of the superstitions that are out there, like especially culturally.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there are times, you know, if you got a new car, they would break an egg like by the car. I don't know what it meant, but it was some kind of like celebration or whatever. There's always like such random superstitions, especially with my grandma back in the days. There's a lot of different ones. Me personally, I don't believe in them. Like, I don't look at them. I don't pay attention to them. Jess, do you pay attention to them or no?
I pay attention to them. I don't necessarily really believe a lot of them. I think a lot of this is just kind of superstition. It's like, yeah, okay, you know. But I'm like, whatever about it. I don't really believe a lot about it. However, curses. Now, that's one thing I do believe in. So I made a game for us to play. I have three curses here. One of them has been – they're all three, like, true. They're all true stories. They all happened. But one has been kind of debunked as, like, okay, people made up stories about this that aren't true, that it just kind of got lost throughout the years and it became a curse.
Okay.
So I have three here. Let's see if you can tell me which one is the fake one. So the first one is James Dean and the Curse of Little Bastard. On September 30th, 1955, James Dean was killed when his silver Porsche 550 Spider, he called Little Bastard, was struck onto an oncoming vehicle. From then on, up until 1960, so about 5 years after his death, a mysterious series of accidents occurred involving the Little Bastard, resulting in serious injuries to spectators and even a truck driver's death. So I was talking about that car. That car, that James Dean's 550 Porsche Spider was cursed. He crashed it, and the parts, any part that was associated with that car, whether it was tires, the engine, a door, it was something happened to that. So that's the first one.
So we have to guess if that's real or if it's not?
Correct.
Okay.
But I got mine. I have some more. All right. Okay. The second one is called the Hope Diamond. And this one goes back all the way to the mid-1600s when the diamond was supposedly purchased by a French merchant in India who then sold it to French royalty. And it stayed there up until the French Revolution, where it was actually owned by King Louis XVI and his wife, Marie Antoinette. And, well, if you know what happened to them, right, Alan? And you're a bit of a historian. I feel like you know what happened to them.
No, you got to tell the whole story.
Tell the whole story. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, they got beheaded while they were owning this diamond. And then it was stolen. And from there on, anyone who was around the diamond or even owned it has some sort of bad luck, including the mailman who delivered the diamond to the Smithsonian, who, after delivering the diamond, crushed his leg, injured his head, then lost his house in a fire.
Curtis, I'm a little lost right now.
Just wait till the last one is more.
What I think the premise is, we're picking the one that's been debunked officially, right?
So the one not okay, the one that's not real.
Yeah, yes. And there's one of these three.
Okay, so I got the first two down. Okay, so there's one more.
There's one more. It's called the 27 Club. Eric Clapton once said that jazz player Robert Johnson was the most important blues musician who ever lived, and believed that he played the guitar so well that he must have made a deal with the devil. Mm-hmm. And when he died at the age of 27, people believed that it was his time to pay for his side of the deal. Following his death, several musical stars and geniuses that died at the age of 27, including Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, and most recently Amy Winehouse. Those are three curses. One of those, more or less, have been debunked to writers kind of writing stories and nitpicking certain things. But the other two, for the most part, are actual events that have happened and can be, you know, you can find factual things that lead into this.
Okay, so let's do each one real quick, okay? So, Curtis, I'm going with the first one I think is real. You think that one's real or no?
Yeah.
I've
heard that passed around before. So I've heard of that, okay. So I believe that one.
The second one or the third one is fake. I'm going to say that the second one, I'm just going to go the second one is fake.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, because I mean, the 27 curse is a pretty mainstream thing as well. So I was going to go with the second one too. Hope died.
Well, you,
how'd we do, Jess?
You guys are 100% correct. 100% correct. It is the Hope Diamond. Honestly, I found this because this is one that I hadn't heard of. This is like new. Like, I've heard of the James Dean stuff. I've heard of the 27 Club. That Eric Clapton thing was a little new. But the Hope Diamond, I found, I was like, ooh, this would be good. But then the more I was like just trying to find like certain aspects of it, the more I found that it's just like, no. Basically, since it goes back to like, you know, the mid 1600s, it has a lot of history. Mm-hmm. So people who research into the diamond basically look and find specific events and say like, all right, this person owned it for 80 years. And in those 80 years, this one bad thing happened to this person. Mm-hmm. And then when it got passed over, this other person had it for 20 years. And this one bad thing happened in 20 years. So it's basically saying, of course, if you look at a person's life and pick out the worst thing that happened while they own it, there's going to be something to everyone. So that's how that curse was kind of spread around. And even the mailman who was supposedly injured, I find no existence. I find a name, but there's no existence that actually really did happen.
Well, focus. I'll say this on the Mahomes thing, because that's what you were kind of referring to on the cover. So on the cover, I'll tell you what, there's been a lot of players who were on the cover and at some point got injured. But the Mahomes thing, that's like I know he's not the only player, but that's like a revelation, right? Like, here's Mahomes was on the cover of Madden and not only didn't have any injuries, the dude won a Super Bowl. So I'm not one to, you know, fall into that stuff. I'm glad Lamar Jackson didn't pay any attention to it as well. And those are two of, you know, the most popular players right now in the league. So that's kind of it's an interesting setup when you see all those conversations that go down about the Madden cover, this Madden curse. Oh my gosh, how can you even think about being on the Madden cover? It's great to see Mahomes rocking a Super Bowl. So then that gets debunked a little bit. Curtis, what do you got over there, bud?
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter. It's not really like everyone give their, you know, answer questions and stuff, but it's more, I guess I want to get your guys' take on it. So the NBA is supposedly considering using Walt Disney World's property as a possible location to finish the season. They already have hotels in place and some arenas and all that. And I think it would work, but I kind of wanted to get your guys' take. And if you think that specific choice would work.
Is that the one that Shams put out? That's the Athletic one?
Yep, that's the one that came out a couple hours ago.
Okay, so yeah, Jesse had texted that to me. And right when I saw it, it kind of actually threw me off a little bit, to be real with you. It threw me off because so much of the conversation has been about doing something in Vegas. A lot of the conversation has not been about Florida, even though I know Florida is an option. That's one of the states that's and not just Florida. There's a few different states out there that are a little bit more proactive, I guess you can say. Listen, I don't care how it gets done. I really don't. When you're not going to have fans, it's kind of, I don't want to say irrelevant where the host site is going to be. All you're hoping for is that it's a location that's safe. It's a location where they can get all the testing done. It's a location where if they can have some family come, but I don't even know how that works out. Like, there is an advantage of doing it at Disney World because you have the hotels. There's probably a good chance that those theme parks aren't open, or if they are open, they're open in a much more limited capacity. Like, think about this. We obviously all work for Disney. Think about how Disney's world got shook overnight. What I'm talking about are the theme parks, the hotels, the cruise line, like all that got affected. And even if at some point that comes back, it's going to take time for it to grow again, for people to have confidence to say, okay, I'm okay with going on a cruise, or I'm okay with going to Disneyland and staying in Anaheim at one of the Disney hotels. Like, all of that is going to take time. So maybe, Curtis, what you're hitting on is that there's availability there. Let's put it that way, and probably something that could be coordinated from a personal level, however they do it. I don't like almost at this point, I don't care how it gets done. If it gets done, it's a win for everybody. What do you think, Jess?
I just want to know, since, you know, you and me, Alan, we're part of the Lakers broadcast for 710 ESPN. Do we get to travel to the team to Walt Disney World? Because, you know, I would love to go back. I've been there once, and that place is huge. That is the perfect, one of the perfect places to do it if you're going to do it. I don't know.
You know, I've never been. I've never been to Disney World. Have you been, Curtis?
It is humongous.
Yeah, a long time ago. I went when I was younger.
Just to give you an idea how big it is. So, you know, they have four theme parks there. The main one is called Magic Kingdom, which is essentially their version of Disneyland. Their parking lot for that theme park is the size of California Adventure's, that whole theme park here in Anaheim. So the size of one whole theme park here is the size of the parking lot for one of their theme parks over there.
What a lot of people don't know is Disneyland, not so much, but Disney World, there's like a whole infrastructure behind the resort itself. There's a, you know,
crazy.
Like a, they call it underground city, but you can, they have a setup, like they have everything. They have their own ambulances and all that stuff, their own firefighters too. And it's a whole thing.
I mean, the way you travel from one place to another when you're there, if you're staying on the resort, is by bus or by, you know, they have the new gondolas. There's, you can use, what else? Is there another way? Or you can just walk. I mean, it'd be a far walk, but there's all those methods, their own public transportation system you can use. And it's, you know, if you're close to the monorail, you can use a monorail too.
Well, let's do this. Let's keep throwing out ideas of how we could get the season back. And hopefully at some point, that's something that's realistic. I mean, don't you guys look forward to the day where we're sitting here and we're having a conversation and we have concrete dates, we have concrete location, we know exactly how it's going to work out. I mean, it might take another 30, 60 days to get those details, but it will be a good problem to have once we get there. So let's, I guess you could say, one step at a time. Appreciate it, fellas. Good questions, all right?
Yes, sir. That's all I'm waiting for, is for all the sports to come back and we get back to some sort of normal.
You're telling me. I think we're all waiting for it. Okay, so let's do this when we come back. Jason Stark from The Athletic had an article, and it was really kind of had an emphasis about not enough noise about the Red Sox, not enough noise about the Houston Astros, that the players should take more ownership in baseball. So I want to talk a little bit about that article. I think it brings up some good topics and something that we can relate to the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll do that coming up next. Also, just a quick reminder, Dan Wolkin from the USA Today, NCAA takes step towards allowing athletes to earn income from endorsements and social media content. He's coming up right around 8:30. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, Dan Wolkin, USA Today, coming up in about 10 minutes or so. We'll talk about this NCAA and what some of the steps they took today towards allowing athletes to earn income. What does that all mean? There's seems like so many different moving parts on that front. So we'll do that. We'll do that shortly. So Jason Stark of The Athletic, you know, there's been so many articles about baseball where you feel like it's not the right publicity that you're looking for. And this, you know, obviously I'm referring to the last 3 months or so. So his article, the headline is, it's time for players to take ownership of the game. And you can go into the article on The Athletic, you know, great stuff on there. And really what he's referring to is talking about what went on with the Houston Astros a few months ago and what just happened with the Red Sox. This is one of those conversations where I know for me, you know, it frustrates me as more of a casual fan of baseball to where I don't feel like I could trust baseball. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he had an opportunity in two different instances to take action and kind of try and send a message. You know, sometimes the crime doesn't fit the punishment, right? And it could work both ways. Sometimes it's too harsh, and other times it's too lenient. I thought for baseball, it was so important for baseball to try and do something that was they got to send a message to the rest of the league. They have to send a message to players out there, to owners out there, to managers out there. It's very, very important that when it comes to the integrity of your game, that there could be no gray area. And I think for baseball, that's one of the biggest issues that they have right now. There's this gray area in baseball. The Houston Astros getting the opportunity to get away with cheating does not send a message to the rest of the league that, hey, we're not going to put up with this. And if you did do it, not only is it going to hurt you financially, not only are we going to find a way to suspend you, but we're also going to take away anything that you won in the process. So last week, the Boston Red Sox, they get investigated. And the investigation was going on for a while. We actually thought the results of the investigation were going to come out a lot earlier. They didn't. They came out last week. And this is what they came up with. What they came up with is that their video guy, JT Watkins, was decoding signs. He was doing it in real time. He was doing it in their replay room during games. And that's not legal, or at least that's not what the rules say. Okay. So that full investigation meant JT Watkins, the video guy, was the guy that was going to take all the brunt for the Red Sox cheating in some capacity. Jason Stark's article talking about the players needing to take ownership of the game. You know, I mentioned this yesterday, and I think this is a perfect example. And by the way, Max Scherzer is all over this article as well. And Scherzer's got a lot of the conversation about, yeah, this is on our back. We should be finding a way to make sure that anything that happens with the morale of the game, we dictate and we determine what happens in our game. He says, we're the ones most affected by this, the players, we can handle it. And he's, you know, certainly talking about what's gone on in baseball over this short period of time. So I want to stay with this because a lot of the time in sports, justice will eventually serve itself and it's going to be done by the players. So if the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Houston Astros are in the same division this year, and it's an 80 to 100 game season or schedule or whatever the case is, it's a minimized schedule. They're not playing 162 games. If they do this East, West, and Central, and it's the Astros and the Dodgers, I'm going to tell you what will happen. What will happen is Dodger players and Dodger managers and Dodger coaches will make decisions that 100% have in the back of their mind some kind of an effect of 2017. What I'm referring to there is, yeah, there's going to be some pitches thrown at batters. There's going to probably be some clearing of the bases. Clearing of the dugouts. There's definitely going to be situations, predicaments, and moments where players are going to try and take justice into their own hand. So I think, you know, when I read an article like this and it's saying that players can have more control, it's a player's league. I know technically some leagues like the NFL, it's an owner's league. The NBA, they call it a player's league. And they're talking about more the distribution of money and they're talking about the power that the players have or the union has. Baseball, it's a powerful player's union. Unfortunately for baseball, they have allowed, at least the players have allowed, that these circumstances where it's okay for baseball teams out there to literally have a question mark of whether their World Series trophy is it's legit or it's not. We know the answer. It wasn't legit. Players do got to take over the game. And I think that's going to eventually happen this season. Whatever that format looks like, yeah, you're going to have some – you're going to have many a teams that are upset with the Houston Astros, and there's going to be games where those Astros players are targets. And that's just not something that anybody's going to be able to stop because that's part of the game, and that's what baseball has created. Because if baseball would have done the right thing and kind of cleaned this up themselves and send a message to the Astros and to the rest of the league, this ain't happening. It's not okay. We're not going to put up with it. Then it wouldn't happen. But once the season starts, I'm telling you, there's definitely going to be – Dodgers are a prime example. You don't think when they play the Astros, they're not going to have in mind what happened in 2017. Of course they are. Okay, Dan Wolkin, we're going to switch gears here. USA Today, NCAA takes steps toward allowing athletes to earn income from endorsements and social media content. Good article in the USA Today. He's coming up next, and we'll get a little bit better of a handle of how significant this news was today on NCAA. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Great article right now. NCAA takes step towards allowing athletes to earn income from endorsements, social media content. Dan, thanks for taking some time and joining the show.
No problem.
Okay, if you don't mind, because I know there's so many layers to this, can you help just kind of describe exactly what happened today with the NCAA and some of the implications that comes with it?
Well, essentially, if you go back to February of 2019, when California first started down the path of adopting a state law that would essentially open up athletes in the state of California colleges to be able to earn money for their name, image, and likeness, it then sort of ballooned into a nationwide movement. A bunch of different states and Congress got involved. And at that point, last fall, seeing the writing on the wall that the political pressure had really turned on this issue, the NCAA Board of Governors approved the direction, moving in the direction of allowing name, image, and likeness. Since then, there was a working group that basically kind of had to distill that down into recommendations, and then those recommendations were put forth, and essentially the recommendations were broad. It was, we believe that college athletes should be able to, you know, endorse products and do commercials within certain limits and be able to make those kinds of deals, and then they had to move that forward to the president. The president approved that. So now they'll have to form it into actual NCAA legislation that they'll adopt in January of next year. So we're not quite at the end, but this is kind of the beginning of the end of the process.
You had a portion of your article, Governor of Florida, quoted in your article saying, "It's my hope that this is not another hidden ball trick allowing the NCAA to punt this issue down the field. With the global pandemic changing our economy now more than ever, we must give flexibility to all students to both continue their education and provide for themselves and their families." Is there some concern that the NCAA will punt down the road?
Well, I don't think it's about punting. Look, I think the NCAA, they don't get a lot of benefit of the doubt on any of this just because of their history as an organization. And certainly there's people who are going to pile on no matter what they do. I think the issue is just, did this go far enough? Because various states have proposed laws that maybe go even further than what the NCAA proposed today. And what the NCAA wants, ultimately, is they want Congress to step in and have a plan that basically covers the whole country, as opposed to having 50 different state laws that allow a bunch of different levels of this. So the NCAA is not going to make everybody happy. They want to keep some regulatory ability because they're worried about recruiting. The NCAA wants to allow name, image, and likeness, but still have the ability to say that some of this stuff might not be allowed because it's a clear recruiting inducement. And that's where the fight is going to be with some of these different states and legislators who you know, envision name, image, and likeness as this totally free market system. And I don't think the NCAA is quite ready to go there.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today, joining the Sliwa Show. So, Dan, I'll ask this because what kind of effect do you think this ends up having on personal endorsements, social media following. I know, you know, athletes trying to take advantage of the fact that they have such a good following. How do these types of things come into play, or that has not been figured out? This is kind of what you're referring to. They're hoping that Congress comes in and has a countrywide plan for every school and every university.
Well, look, I think the bottom line to it is what the schools want to do, what the NCAA wants to do, is have a system where athletes are allowed to go out and make their own deals, you know. Mm-hmm. And if that's a deal with a car dealership or a bank or somebody going to their hometown and gets kicked, you know, $250 to make an appearance, whatever that is, they you know, they're going to allow that kid to go make that deal. But what they don't want is for the schools to be involved in setting anything up. And they don't want anything to be used as a recruiting inducement from a booster to entice a player to go to their favorite school. Now, that may be hard to differentiate all those things, but the NCAA is going to try to put in a framework to at least mitigate that possibility. Will they succeed? I don't know. Will it be a little bit, you know, messy and crazy? Maybe. They may have to do some trial and error on things, but that's the goal they're going to try to get to.
Dan, would college athletes, would they be able to have agents for that or no?
Yeah, that's within the recommendations that agents would be allowed. Whether or not, you know, there's more regulations on top of that, you know, I think that's probably likely. I think the schools would want to have some type of idea of what kind of people their athletes are associating with, to try to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of in any way, or that, you know, there's people who have corrupt intent in dealing with this. But, you know, what that looks like, again, you know, more unanswered questions on that side of it.
You know, Dan, it's by the way you're explaining it is great, because I think the, you know, the article, there's a lot of different just details that it's great for listeners who are out there that get a chance to hear this interview. But trying to kind of control that, man, I'm just trying to think in my head how schools are not going to use that to, and I know this is going to be the fight, but how schools are not going to use that as an advantage or use these boosters somehow as part of recruiting. You know, it just seems like as much as they try to do that, it sounds like that is going to be done and will be exposed at some point. I could be completely wrong, but it's not like, you know, the NCAA and a lot of this recruiting that's been done in the past has exactly been the cleanest way of getting done.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're trying to take an organization that's done something one way for decades and decades and completely turn it on its head. You know, and that is going to take a lot of time and effort and, you know, figuring things out. And the truth is, you know, there are differences between pro sports and college sports. And, you know, all the different elements that go into the recruiting environment, I don't think it's unreasonable that schools want to protect that. So, you know, the level to which the NCAA is going to have an active role in writing this will, you know, be determined by their ability to satisfy a lot of different constituencies, and that includes politicians. And, you know, I don't envy what they're having to do or what they're trying to do, because it is going to be hard and it is going to be complicated, and there are going to be areas where they may not have great answers, but this is the position they find themselves in, largely because they took so long to act in the first place, and they're just going to have to figure it out.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today. NCAA takes step towards allowing athletes to earn income from endorsements and social media content. Use those as examples. You go on USA Today right now and read the article. Dan, so what is the next move from here?
Well, what the next move is over the next however many months, you know, you're going to have college athletics leaders and officials, you know, coming together around the guidelines that were approved today, and they're going to be trying to form that into legislation and, you know, address all these things we're talking about, all the what ifs and, you know, how do you do that? They're going to have to come up with those answers this summer and this fall, and then they're going to have to put forward that legislation and try to pass it at the NCAA convention in January.
Dan, final question I'll ask you here, and I don't know how much you followed this, but just out of curiosity, what did you think of Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, Deshaun Nix, all signing with the new G League program? They're all skipping college basketball. They're going to get a chance to get paid in the G League. I'm not saying that there's any, you know, connection here, but obviously these are players that could have gone to college, are not going to college. They're going to be a part of the G League program. Any thoughts on that kind of dynamic for NCAA basketball?
Well, I think that, you know, the NCAA for a long time has told these kids that if you don't want to go to college and play under our rules, then go pro. And for the last number of years, those options were not very attractive. You know, it was go to China or go to Europe where the coach is going to hate you and not play you, or, you know, go to Australia, which is, you know, 7,000 miles away from your family. So, you know, those were not very attractive options. But if the NBA is going to put together a legitimate, you know, developmental path that is halfway between high school, college, and the NBA, and they're going to get paid a fairly significant amount of money to do it and get real coaching and be in a real environment and not have to deal with some of the drawbacks to G League life, you know, only play a limited amount of games where you're not going to get exposed night after night, I think there's a real attractiveness to that, and it does change some things in the sense that colleges are going to have to now compete with that possibility for top talent, and it does change the equation, and I don't think it's good for college basketball, but college basketball, this is kind of what they wanted, so, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Could it be, Dan, just your final thought on this, could it be from a perspective that you're going to get a lot of athletes, most of these top recruits, you know, that are top, I don't know, 100 or something along those lines in ESPN's rankings for college basketball, if most of those players are one-and-dones, could it also, in a way, not on purpose, kind of create an NCAA when it comes to basketball where you might get more familiar with players? They might be there now for 3-4 years because they're not good enough to jump into the league. They're not one of these one-and-dones. Could that inadvertently happen, or do you think that no matter what, no, this isn't good because a lot of your top-notch talent is not coming to the NCAA?
Well, I actually think it goes the other way because – just because you have this system doesn't mean that you're not going to have players be one and done in college. You're still going to have most kids enter college with the goal of getting out of there and earning money playing basketball as fast as they possibly can. You are still going to have guys who enter college and blow up as freshmen and turn pro. Or just simply they have somebody telling them, you're good enough to get drafted 25th, and you should go pro. So that is still going to happen. And I don't really see how any of this impacts the number of kids who leave early. And I just think it's just that those kids are probably going to be a little less talented in the aggregate than what you had before.
Dan, great stuff. I appreciate you doing this. And I know content perspective, it's been great to get just some more intel on this. There's a lot of moving parts on this NCAA stuff, so thank you again for joining the show.
Thank you.
All right, this NCAA stuff is confusing. I got to be honest. I mean, I read through his whole article. There's obviously a lot of different information that came out today. They're going to wait for Congress to kind of jump in and set some rules across the country. But one thing I can tell you, and I'll do it when we come back, I think this has an effect. You could look at it both ways. From a college football and a college basketball perspective, I think there's positives and negatives. And if you want to use that NBA as an example with this G League that they're creating, taking away some of these players from going to schools like UCLA and some of these other upper echelon universities, there's a way I think this can work for everybody. I'll explain what I'm talking about coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Sounds good, Ethan. Appreciate it, bro. have a conversation with your pops when I get a chance. All right. Okay. So this NCAA stuff and the conversation is not going anywhere for a while. Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Nice of him to join the show. But a couple things I disagree with. So when I say that Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, Deshaun Nix, all signing with the G League program, Deshaun Nix, this was a five-star recruit from UCLA. And now all of a sudden is going to be a part of this G League program, which we don't even really have that much information. They're trying to create a team here in L.A. This is a team that isn't – these players aren't playing in the G League against these other opponents. I don't even know how the whole thing works. But what I do know is there's one thing that the G League is going to offer that college basketball can't, at least not in its current setup. They're going to pay them. And they're going to pay him a substantial amount of money. And when I say $500,000, which I think is the contract that Jalen Green is getting, granted, he's the number one high school recruit in the top 100 that ESPN does when they do these power rankings for some of these college players. That's a big amount of change when you're coming out of high school. And what it will set him up for eventually is to get into the NBA. But this is where I disagree with Dan. Dan Wolkin, USA Today. What I disagree with, there's a lot of people out there right now thinking that this is doom and gloom for college basketball. And then we'll just use the college football part of things where they are going to allow in some shape, way, or form, in some capacity, they're going to now start allowing endorsements and players to get paid for their name, which is the way it obviously should have been from the start, but it never was, or it hasn't been under the current structure of NCAA. But when I look at college basketball, I just kind of key in on this one. The college basketball part, one of the only ways that I could get into college basketball is if I see the same players year after year with the same school. I'm not saying it has to be 4 years, but can I get 2-3 years so there's some familiarity with that university? So if I'm watching a game and it's the Pac-12, if it's the same guys coming back for Arizona or the same guys coming back for UCLA or USC, if they're too talented, of course they're going to get into the league. I get that part. But if your top players, top high school players are now going to choose the G League, well, it might create opportunities for high or for college athletes to be playing at their university for more than 1 year, that it's more than just a one and done. Now, if a player has a really good season, they end up, you know, being drafted in the league. I get it. I mean, this is the whole goal of what each one of these players want. They want that opportunity to play in the NBA, and they want that opportunity to make money. And that's exactly what they should do, frankly. I mean, that's why a lot of us go to school, is to eventually find a good job that's going to pay us good money, and then we're going to be able to support our family. If they're able to do that at 18, 19 years old, more power to them. But I think in this specific scenario, the only thing that I could see myself being attracted to when it comes to college basketball is the hope that, okay, if I'm going to see the same players year in and year out, then I might grow some equity with that school, even if it's a school that I went to. I went to San Diego State University, but if you got some universities out there where there's kind of a growing rivalry that you've got student athletes that have been there for 2-3, maybe even 4 years, I think it could actually help college basketball. On the football front, I think that whole thing is a mess. I don't know how that's going to work, because you got to imagine that these big time schools, the SECs of the world, these big time universities are going to find ways through boosters to pay players and be able to kind of outbid against other teams because they make that much more money. So that's kind of the way that I've always looked at this stuff for college football, college basketball. We'll see how it all plays out. Quick reminder, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. As always, tune into the morning show. We'll go local all day. Sedano follows after that. Will Cade Show, Mason and Island. And then Sliwa Show is back starting at 6:30 tomorrow, but I'll do crosstalk at 6 o'clock. Sliwa Show the rest of the week. If you miss any part of the show, ESPN app or iTunes. LA, have a great rest of your night.